Thank you. That was awesome. You know, the little fella that fell down here, that's not the first time that's happened. There's a story behind these rails, even though I asked Warren about them, and he said it gave me a totally different answer. But I guess probably 5-6 years ago, I was praying, opening a service. So I decided to walk down these steps. And when I did, I got to the third one, and I fell, and I rode. Like, rolled right before in the opening service. The next week, the rails were up. So Warren just said, we just did that as a safety precaution. He said it had nothing to do with me. But so I understand where the little guy has been there before. We are, you know, I told Tom there's actually three versions of this sermon. There's a short, medium, and a long. So we're going to try to go for the medium here. But I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you, and just really excited about this. Is actually a Sunday school series from the book of Philippians that I taught. I looked, and it was actually May of 2011. And I, when Lynn Turner got up to speak this morning, I saw Philippians. I was like, "Uh-oh, I might need to go back." But anyway, he's in chapter 2, so I'm in chapter 4. So we're going to get a whole introduction to, or a whole study on Philippians, if you will. The sermon I've titled is Got Joy. Do you have joy? You know, the book of Proverbs actually says this. It says, for as he thinks in his heart, so is he. You know, and as we think about the things we think about, that's who we are. It's who we become. Sheree was telling me the other day, she was reading in her devotions, Charles Stanley, his mother says, you know, the things you think about is eventually where your feet end up going, don't they? So just as Christians, we are people who should have joy. And if you think about, or if you study the entire book of Philippians, it's an epistle of joy and what it really means to have joy. You know, and I think about this term joy versus happiness. In our world today, there's a lot of people desire to be happy. Do what makes you happy. But you know, there's a real distinction between what joy is and what happiness is. And if you actually look at the word happy, it actually means happen stance. Which, what does that mean? It means in order to be happy, it depends on your circumstances. Right? And if you think about some of the things that make us happy, you know, it's, don't our children make us happy? I mean, they absolutely do. There's times where they don't make us so happy, too, right? Just as you're a parent. You know, I thought about other things that make me happy. Sometimes I get happy at football. Today I was happy for the first half. I was very discouraged in the second half, right? That's happiness, right? It depends on the circumstance. You know, and there's good and bad. So a lot of times people desire, if your whole desire in life is just to be happy, you're going to have ups and downs, and there will be times where you're unhappy. But you think about this word joy, and especially as the Apostle Paul talks to us about joy all throughout Philippians, you know, and as Mr. Turner said this morning, Paul writes this book from prison. Think about it. The epistle of joy, or the letter about joy, is written from prison. I mean, that just kind of, it almost sums up as you go through the whole book of Philippians, the four chapters in itself. So I want to talk to you a little bit about that and what it means to be joyful. So if you will, take your Bibles, turn to Philippians 4, and this was actually a two-lesson study that I did, and it had 5 points, so we're going to do the last 2 points. We'll skip the first three just for the sake of time. But we're going to look at, or start with Philippians 4:4, and it says, rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice. Now, Paul knew that there were ADD people like me in the world when he wrote this verse. You need to say it twice. He's saying, hey, rejoice in the Lord. And he said, if you didn't get it, rejoice in the Lord. Now, who do we rejoice in? We rejoice in the Lord. It doesn't depend on our, and that's the whole thing with joy. It doesn't really depend on our circumstances. It's focused on Christ and what he is. You know, one of the things I'd read this, sometime back, is it's joy defined. And joy can be defined as a supernatural delight, right? The supernatural delight in the person the purposes and the people of God. So if you think about joy, it always comes from God. So joy is not something that it comes and goes. It's something in our heart that we can always have. And for me, that, remember that song, I Got the Joy, Joy, Joy Down in My Heart? One thing I never sing in, when I sing in church, I have to stand beside Cherie. That's the reason God gave me her. It's because they turn around and look, and they're looking at her, not me, thank God. Otherwise, they would be looking at me, so I'm not going to sing it for you. But I've got the joy, joy, joy down in my heart. Then what did we say? Where? Right? I've got the joy, joy, joy down in my heart. And it's there. Then it goes on and on and on. And it says, and I'm so happy. I'm so happy that I've got the love of Jesus down in my heart. Some just great theology in those songs. Over and over again, we teach our songs. So I just ask you tonight, do you have the joy? And you look at this chapter, and you, as you read through it, the first few verses here, you'll see characteristics of a joyful heart. Verses 1 through 4, you'll see that a joyful heart resolves conflict, and there was actually a conflict going on in the Philippian church that Paul is the reason he's addressing this. And as he goes through and actually is being thankful for the gift that the Philippians have sent him while he's in prison, you'll see in verses 5 through 7 that the joyful heart removes anxiety. Anybody ever suffer from anxiety, from worry? Don't we? Well, the joyful heart removes that. And Paul talks about that. And then verses 8 and 9, you'll see that the joyful heart, it dwells on the good. We actually have verses 8 and 9 posted in our house just because our girls, teenage girls, you know, there's no drama. But they can get really focused sometimes on the negative. One of my daughters, she's just like me, and she can be very, very critical. And we really have to we use that verse to remind her. If you want to have joy, you got to focus on the good. And those two verses just address that in an awesome way. But verse 10 is where we're going to pick up, and I'm going to read this. I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances. I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation. Whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. So first here in verse 10, we see that joy, the joyful heart, it comes in the Lord's provision. Notice what Paul says. He says, I will rejoice in the Lord greatly. So why is he rejoicing? Well, the Philippian church sent him a gift. And it's not that he's so thankful, he appreciates the gift, but he's so thankful that they gave. You know, the book of Corinthians actually tells us that they gave out of poverty. Have you ever had a need that the Lord met? And Scott and I were talking today at the restaurant. We just, I was asking him about business and whatnot, and he and I started talking. And, you know, it reminds me of 2007, 2008. Praise the Lord. So I found out one day, I was in a business and laid about half the people off of the business. And finally, the investor and myself had a conversation. And, you know, we got to the place where, it just, math is math. And it just didn't make sense to have me in the business. So that day I come home and I told Cherie, I was like, hey, here's the way it's going to work. And I'm going to get laid off. And everybody remember, I mean, teachers were cutting back on their hours and just going through a lot of different things. The economy in general was uncertain, and it was pretty much everyone. That day in Carline at school, Cherie, someone pulls up and says, hey, in my prayer time this morning, the Lord wanted me to give this to you, and gave her an envelope. This is a student that she goes to school with. A grandmother, actually. You know what was in the envelope? $1,000 check. You know, and I have to tell you, initially was not joy in my heart. There was actually, I was a little bit angry, actually. I enjoy giving, but I've never been in a position where people had to give to me. And isn't that really sad? You know, when you think about the Apostle Paul here, he's in prison. He writes this epistle. Evidently, he's had some time to think. And he's really thought about, hey, here's some things I need to address, because he's just writing every day. And all of a sudden, he writes this about joy, and he appreciates the Lord's provision and how the Lord has provided for him. You know, have you ever had someone show up and meet a need for you, whether it's financial, encouragement, comfort? These are tears of joy when God meets a need in our life. You know, I found that it humbles me, or humbled me. And just knowing that no matter what, the Lord, that joy will come in his provision, whatever it may be. And whether your economy is great or whether your economy is not, it really doesn't matter. We can have joy. And it just reminded, that more so than anything, reminded me of this point in the message. The other thing we see here is in verse 11, the joyful heart remains content, or it's a contented heart. You know, to have joy, you have to be content. And I tell you, isn't that something, I don't know about you, but it's something I struggle with. You know, and I think Paul, just the studies I've done with Paul was a very driven individual. I mean, he was not, you know, just the guy that showed up to work and did the bare necessity, just live life. I mean, this guy was driven. Think about it. Every town you go into, you preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, you make somebody mad. You know, they end up, there's a resistance, and then they run you out of town or they put you in prison. I mean, he kind of had this thing down to a certain cadence, but he still just kept going to reach more and more people. And you see, even before his experience on the road to Damascus, I mean, he was just a driven individual, but he also knew how to be content. And he says, not that I speak in regard to need. So he was saying, hey, if you look at this, I rejoice greatly in the Lord that you renewed your concern for me, but you had no opportunity to show it. And then verse 11, I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances. You know, one of the things is, I think being content when you have a lot is a lot more difficult than being content when you have very little. I don't know about you, but that for me, I have to like just put on the brakes sometimes in my life and go, Lord, help me to be content, just like Paul, in whatever state I am, whether I have a lot, whether I have a little. I don't know, you ever wake up, look at your 401k? I'd wake up and listen to Fox Business and just get worried. I have to start praying. I'm like, Lord, I don't know, is the economy going up? Is it going down? And I have to realize that there's nothing I can do about it. You know, ultimately, that comes from you. You're in control of those things. So sometimes joy can't depend on where things are up or down, right? We have to learn to be content in everything. So it's not the money that I'm excited about, Paul says, but your faithfulness. The fact that you gave me a gift. And I would tell you that all of us, as we being content, just giving to others, delighting in giving is really important. So Paul says this. He says, I've learned to be content. He says, joy, and this is joy. My joy is going to be steady. It's going to be good whether things are great, whether I've suffered, or whether, you know, things are really going well and we're feeling, just had an awesome meal. Matter of fact, you think about this word contentment. It actually comes from a Greek word that means a country that being able to provide for itself. So if I'm content, we have everything we need. Isn't that a lot of times what we want in life? We want security. You ever notice people, you just want security. Once we get certain things, we can just get to a certain point. I used to think if I could just get to this place in life, then I have enough. You know, if you could just get your kids graduated, or if you could just get your kids where they could blow dry their hair. That used to be my goal for those of you. I had girls, and we used to have to blow dry their hair every night. When they got to where they could blow dry their hair, That was like 30 minutes of time that I got back. But I miss those times. But to get to those things. As a matter of fact, Paul wrote to Timothy. He says, but godliness with contentment is great gain. You know, and you think about that. Matter of fact, I read in one commentary, it says this, we must never be content with who we are. Right? That's what he's saying. Godliness with contentment is great gain. We must never be content with who we are, but we should always be content with what we have. Shouldn't we? And that's what Paul stresses here. So, and if you think about contentment, it is satisfaction with God's sufficient provision. I'd also read this as five popular false Christian formulas for success as people think about this verse. You know, you think about godliness with contentment is great gain. Well, a lot of times we get it wrong, don't we? A lot of times we think that godliness gives us prosperity. Anybody ever heard that? There's like, if you're a godly person, you're going to be prosperous. As a matter of fact, you can turn the TV on any Sunday and you'll hear those sort of things. It's just, if only you're a godly person, you will be prosperous and all these things will happen to you. We know that's not true, right? Another false formula that we'll hear is kind of the extreme of it, is godliness. If you're godly, that you will be, you'll be in poverty. You'll choose poverty. You won't want to have anything. This is just another extreme. And we know that Satan often works. Doesn't he work in the extremes of our life? Over here where you don't think you can have anything, you know? There's nothing like you come to church and, well, you know, that guy's got a new suit. They're such worldly people. They would only live like us and wear a 30-year-old suit. You know, they would be godly like us. So we can do those sort of things, but neither. So godliness doesn't equal poverty. The other kind of false Christian formula for success is godliness equals power. You ever notice that? That we can more. You just want to have more power, be in charge of more. Not something that godliness equals. Here's another one that I thought is interesting and I think can be misleading, is godliness equals family harmony. You ever know godly people that struggle, have family issues? Family's hard, isn't it? You ever think, if you get your kids to, you know, out of kindergarten, we thought we'd get our kids to high school, out of high school, college. And, you know, as I just read and as I continue to experience life, I realize there are different challenges and different stages all through life, aren't there? And family harmony is just, you know, that's what God uses to keep us on our knees. I mean, if you want to be a good parent, stay on your knees. Because children, I'm sure my parents, I just drive them crazy. I know I do. There's certain things I do to this day as 44 years old that just drives them crazy. So godliness doesn't equal family harmony. Godliness also, it doesn't equal career or ministry success, does it? But it does equal great gain. A lot of times we think, if we're just, you know, Lord, I want to be this sort of person. And once I do that, that means everything in my career is going to follow into place. That you're guaranteed success. You know, I'm going to tell you one of the things from that kind of experience in my life. I thought growing up, you got a college education, you had a great job, and, you know, you're retired with plenty of money. Well, guess what? That isn't always the case. That's not the way the real world works, is it? You know, there are challenges. But we know that godliness with contentment is great gain. And Lord, help us to be content. Here's a couple of other things I'd written down as kind of four areas I can be content. Is I can be content where I am. You know, I can be content in Rome, Georgia. I don't know about you, but I love Rome, Georgia. I really wouldn't want to be any other place in the world. You know, Lord, thank you for being here. I appreciate Pleasant Valley Baptist Church. You know, I love this church. I love the people of this church. I mean, we really do. We have an awesome church with an awesome opportunity. You know, just so many of you, I was telling, Don and I were talking about this the other night at the football game. We just appreciate so many people who have, over the years, just been faithful. And I'm just so thankful for that. So where I am, you know, often we think about You know, if I could only live somewhere else, I would be happier.
Yeah, that's not necessarily true.
Also content with what I do. You know, there's fun in every job, but there's also, there's some downsides. Matter of fact, I was a, years ago I was a private in the Army. This is while I was in school, and I was at Fort Stewart, and one of the, my sergeant came in, and well, I was about to graduate. Actually, I wasn't a private. I was about to graduate from college, so I was going to be a lieutenant in the Army, and I was just a few months away from it. So I was kind of excited about where I was going. So all these people that were in charge of me this week, in about 2 or 3 months, I was going to be their boss. So I was kind of happy to make that transition. But one of the sergeants came in, and he said, hey, Donnie, I need you to go outside and do a police call. Well, what this actually involved is picking up cigarette butts. And I tell you, there's nothing that I hate more than picking up somebody else's cigarette butt that they dropped. You know, I mean, my attitude was, well, they need to go pick up their own cigarette butt. And I frankly, I remember it very distinctly. I had a very negative attitude about it. And he pulled me over to the side afterwards. And I didn't say anything back, but he could just tell. You know, I had such a negative attitude about it. And he was like, hey, I know you're going to be a lieutenant here in another couple of months. But if you want people to follow you, you got to learn to do the hard things. You know, do the hard things and have joy in them. You know, and after that, I just made a decision. Hey, I'm whatever it is, whatever God calls me to do, I'm going to do it and be happy with it. Sometimes you have to fake it till you make it, right? That was, you have to do that, right? But it's a choice, isn't it? I'm going to show up and I'm going to do what God's called me to do, and I'm going to do it with a positive attitude. And I tell you, it was Christians, especially in the workplace, that is, it's the biggest opportunity for us to witness to other people, is our attitudes and how we approach our work. One, we should be excellent at everything we do, you know, and we should give it our best. Two, the other thing is we should show up with an attitude that's like no one else's. You know, there's nothing worse than a Christian who has a negative attitude at work. You're actually doing just the opposite. Rather than being a good witness for Jesus Christ, you're really going, oh, they say they're a Christian. Right? So, Lord, help me to have that. And I remember what I do. Also, what I have. You know, the reality of it is some have less, some have more. And that's okay, because I'm accepting what God has given me. I'm going to be happy whether he's given me very little or whether he blesses me with a lot. And that time in my life taught me that. It taught me that, you know what? Just as happy then as we are now. That joy is something that we can provide. And I remember reading these verses over and over again where Paul says, you know, I've learned to have a little, I've learned to have a lot, whatever state, to be content. So also to be happy with who I am or who I'm with. Sorry, Tony Evans, actually, we're doing this marriage study in our class, and Tony Evans tells this joke that there's this guy, he's in the cemetery, and he's just at this grave, and he's just yelling, why did you do this? Why did you have to go? Well, a bystander comes up, and they're feeling sorry for him. And he says, sir, what's the problem? You know, did your wife pass away? And he said, no, it's my wife's first husband. You know, sometimes we can be unhappy with who we are, aren't we? Or who we're with. You know, my husband could be more like this, or my wife could be more like this. You know, marriages often struggle because we're trying to change our spouse. Sheree and I actually found that in our lives. In the first 6 years of our marriage, I mean, we struggled. Matter of fact, I went to a, I'd gotten out of the Army, spent about 4 years in the Army, and we got out, and we went to a marriage counselor. We just moved to Greenville, South Carolina. Went to a church. Went to a marriage counselor there. The guy didn't know us from Adam from me. I called and made an appointment because we just, you know, we're not doing well. And he sat down to us and listened to us. And he said, well, why don't we do premarital counseling? And I was like, well, we've been married 4 years. We probably don't need that. He goes, no, believe me, we need that. That's where we're going to start. We're going to start with premarital counseling. And that guy did a lot to, Lord used him to save our marriage. But that's something we can have, not be content
is content with where we are. So the other thing Paul says here, he says contentment is learned. I'm going to try to go fast. And he gives us two lessons. He says, hey, I know how to be brought low. You know, have you ever been brought low? You know, parents struggle with this. You ever see your kids sometimes when they're brought low? Don't we want to protect them? Oh, that's something. As a parent, that can be so hard, especially in a culture where we have so many things. But I tell you, the lessons are learned in the low times, aren't they? It's just so important that we don't protect our children from that. You know, Jesus was brought low, and we want to be like Jesus, right? You know, some of the things I've written down here is, what are the things we do instead of being brought low? Don't we run from the process of it? We fight it. We don't embrace it. But Paul says, hey, I know how to get low. He also says, though, I know how to abound. You know, being content is not passive, is it? It's a choice. When God blesses you, that can be, you know, people really struggle with wealth. It can destroy people. Someone once told me that, and I was like, well, Lord, give me the opportunity to at least try it out. So here's a couple of questions to ask yourself. Do you know how to be brought low, not running from it, not hiding from it, not blaming others, but embracing it on your knees? You know, and sometimes being brought low means that we've made mistakes. And that can be a struggle. Sometimes it can even be a struggle to realize that the mistakes we made are things that we should have done differently, our choices, bad choices that we made, or whatever it may be. So God can bless us from that. But also knowing how to abound. You know, can God bless you and enrich you? And when he does it draw your heart away from him? If it can't, then he can't bless us with it. So most often God brings us low before he brings abundance. But we need to learn to be content in each thing. And then in verse 12, Paul gives a secret of how he's done this. He says, I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me. In other words, I can be here or I can be here. And I've learned to do both of these things through Christ, which strengthens me. You know, and sometimes we hear that. We hear that verse. We hear that verse that I can do all things. That's what people think. I can do all things. That's what they're really focused on. But that's not what Paul's saying. He said, I can do all things through Christ. You know, and that's my prayer. I think about joy in my own life. It's, Lord, I just want to live a life and making the most of who I am while I'm here for your purpose. Lord, help myself not to, help me not to get in the way of myself. And to live with joy. Who wants to go through life just worried about everything? Who wants to go through life with just a look on their face? It's just, you know, some people, you're just like, oh my goodness. You know, so, and Paul just gives us the formula here. So joy, a supernatural delight in the person and purposes and people of God. You know, it's interesting. I don't know if you remember, I don't know which company it is, but they do a... talking about retirement planning on TV. And they actually told people in this commercial to post, to take blue and yellow post-its, and they give the blue post-its and they say, hey, we want you to post at different stages of your life all the interesting things you're looking forward to. And then they have the yellow post-its and, you know, all the great things are blue that you plan to do. Then the yellow post-its are the ones that the negative things are going to happen. So what do you think everybody does? Anybody remember this commercial? Everybody gets the blue post-its out, and when you retire, you want to do this, you want your kids to do this, you want them to be this. You know how many yellow post-its are on these things? Very, very few. But you know what? In life, there are ups and there are downs. Aren't they? And so often, those downs hit us, and we're so surprised with them. And I just pray, like Paul, hey, up high, down low, I've learned to be content. I've learned to have joy. I've learned to rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. And that's, I just wanted to share with you tonight.
is, as I think about this passage and I think about 2008 when, you know, somebody gives us, pulls up in a car line and gives us a check for $1,000. You know, I never would have experienced God's provision in that way if it wouldn't have been for, you know, the challenges that we were going through at that time. But also, as things have turned around and you know, things are going well, and if you've looked at your 401k or something recently, you're probably feeling pretty good about it. But you know what? Those things go up and down. That can't be my joy, can it? You know, and that's just what I want to leave with you tonight. Do you have joy? You really truly have joy? And you know, real joy, though, comes from Jesus Christ. It's not something that we can give to ourselves. It's not a choice. You ever got in a room and said, hey, I'm just going to be joyful, joyful, joyful today, and I'm going to go out and smile? Well, no, it doesn't work that way. Joy has to come from the heart, and it can only be given. It's a supernatural delight, not something we can do for ourselves. So that's my prayer for you. It's my prayer for me, especially as things are going well right now. No, Lord, help us to be joyful. Help us not to lose sight. Help us to give, meet needs of others. Help us to be joyful. So let's pray.